Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Shane Barker, the prolific digital marketer who's been at the leading edge of content and influencer marketing for more than 15 years. Based out of Sacramento, California, Shane runs a large marketing consultancy as a fully remote company that's done projects with brands like Creative Live, Adobe, Business.com, Mint, and many more. As a digital strategist, one of the skills Shane has focused on building over the years is his writing ability, where he's become a regular contributor to top publications like Forbes, Inc. Magazine, and the Huffington Post. Somewhere in the mix, Shane somehow finds time to deliver speeches at marketing conferences around the world and teaches a weekly class about influencer marketing down at UCLA in Los Angeles. In this episode, Shane and I talk about how he built a powerful personal brand as one of the world's top authorities on all things influencer marketing. We explore the very early days of his marketing consulting business, including the ways in which he landed his first few clients, all the way up to the growth channels that are working best for him today. We dig into Shane's best piece of advice for aspiring marketing consultants, the ins and outs of what it takes to formulate, then execute on a winning influencer marketing campaign, and more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Shane Barker. Shane, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ryan, what's going on, man? Finally get a chance to talk with you. I'm excited about being on today.
This has been a very long time in the making. I'm pumped to finally connect. So you've been in the digital marketing space for, you know, the better part of 15 years from what I can see. And I've been, you know, following along with everything you've been writing and seeing your face pop up for the better part of probably 10 of those years. Now, before we get into what your business looks like today and all the digital marketing that you're up to, I do want to rewind the clock for a moment. So, Shane, where are you originally from?
So, I'm originally from Sacramento, California, and still that's where my home base is in Sacramento. I do teach a class at UCLA, so I do fly down to Los Angeles, not this quarter, but hopefully starting back up next quarter, and I fly down once a week, and so I do those classes on Tuesday nights from 6:30 to 9:30, and then I fly back to Sacramento. So it's a little bit of a hectic schedule, but it's worth it when you get a chance to teach at UCLA and get to work with the students. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Wow, that's quite a commute.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's funny. So it's like I've got it down to a science. Like originally I was flying into LAX, which if you've flown into LAX, it's always a challenge. It's a roll of the dice.
No thanks.
So now I fly into Burbank, right? So I go Sacramento to Burbank, which is an easy, easy flight. I mean, it's an hour. I get there. I get my rental car. The people know me. I mean, I have this cadence. I stay at the same Marriott. I mean, it's this system. So I have a good system now. In the beginning, it was a little chaotic, but I've got it down to a science now that it's good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So what was it like growing up in Sacramento? I'm from the Fresno area myself, so I'm very familiar with what it's like, kind of small town-ish living.
Yeah, yeah. I love Sacramento, man. What I like about Sacramento is it's a great hub. You know, we're an hour and a half away from San Francisco. You're an hour and a half away from Lake Tahoe. I'm an hour and a half away from the beach. And it's not crazy expensive. Now, you know, in comparison to other cities, you know, throughout, I guess, maybe, you know, the United States, it's probably more expensive, but not as expensive as like Los Angeles or San Francisco or something. So I enjoy it, man. I've got my friends and a lot of family here and stuff, and we got a great airport. I can really go anywhere in the nation at any point and fly out at any time that I need to, which is kind of the key for me is like, hey, that accessibility to be able to go wherever, but at least be able to come back to the home base. And once again, we enjoy camping and hiking and all that kind of fun stuff. So for us, it's always been a great base to be able to do whatever we need to do.
Yeah. And it's a great time to also be in the kind of business you're in because you're super flexible, right? You're not tied to being in, you know, San Francisco or LA or New York. It doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, and that's the cool thing too is that and it's taken a little while to build, but you know, I have an all remote team. So, you know, I've had companies, one of my last companies, I had 130 employees that were all in an office. And that's a different beast, man. That's a different beast. And so now I've built it out. So I have a remote team. So my team's all over the world and I enjoy that because it's awesome when you have projects because my turnaround time can be insane because I could talk to a client at 5 p.m. and then have something done by 8 a.m. by the time they wake up and they don't understand how I'm Superman or if I have like a magic wand or something. So the remote team is, once again, there's upsides and downsides, but for the most part, it's all upside because it's, you know, it's great. It's great when you get those processes in place.
I love it. All right. So Shane, going back, you know, to this kind of the earlier days for you in Sacramento, let's say, do you remember the very first, say, business or side project, you know, selling lemonade, whatever that may have been, that you started tinkering on yourself?
So this is funny. So I don't even know if this has came out. So I have a podcast that I did. This was a few weeks ago. And I talked about that, not necessarily a lemonade stand, but my big thing as a kid, I remember it vividly, is that like I really, really liked money. Like money was really intriguing to me as a young kid. And we were in my mom and I, my family, we were in Oregon. And I'll never forget, there was somebody that was collecting cans, doing something. And they went, and I remember looking, they recycled the cans and they gave them money. And I thought, wait a second, you got to be kidding me. Like there's all this, I'm looking at a campground, right? I'm seeing all these cans. I'm like, there's like money all around me. So as a kid, I like lost my mind. And so I turned into like a, you know, potentially homeless kid, right? That's going around and collecting cans at age 5 of all the camps. And so I was collecting these cans and I went up and they gave me, I don't know what it was. It might've been, this is aging myself. It might've been a nickel or maybe, I don't know what it was, yeah. But I remember the fact that they gave me like $2 for all 10,000 cans that I had. And in my mind, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like there's money just sitting around. And my mom, it used to not drive her crazy, but it was kind of funny. I would go in and I would go into, do you remember like when you can get the newspapers and stuff and they would have the change that would drop out?
Oh yeah.
I would actually always go in and check those and see if there was like a quarter, a dime or a nickel or maybe a piece of gum or like whatever, right? I'm always searching. And then at 7-Eleven, I'll never forget, it was like the counter was there, but it didn't go all the way down. So there was like this area down below and people would drop change and it's like, I don't want to try to get that quarter under there. Well, I'm 5 years old. So all I had to do is get down and I would grab change. I just remember this like infatuation with the fact that money was out there and people were just letting it like, just let it be there. And they didn't really care about it. I mean, even today, and this is where my wife, like, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, I'll pick up a nickel in a hot second. Like I do not even think twice about it. For me, no, it's not like, you know, I could be in Vegas and spending $100 at a table and I'll go pick up a nickel. My wife's like, why are you picking up a nickel? I'm like, 'cause it's a nickel. It's like free money. So there's always been something to that for me. It's just about, you know, money. I've always had the infatuation. I would say it's tapered off over the years. In the beginning, I was like, I want to be a millionaire by this time and it has to do this and has to do that. Now I'm a little more strategic about projects and stuff that I take on, but I will absolutely pick up a hot nickel or a hot dime on the ground at any point, at any time.
It's funny how those things don't change over time, right? Like you get this drilled in at a certain young age and then it's like, all right, this behavior sets in.
It is, man. It's a trip. I remember there was one time, and this is one time where I almost killed myself, not on purpose, but we were going to San Francisco and there was a toll booth. And so somebody was going up to the toll booth and they would just go bring their money out. And I guess the wind took it or something. And so we drive up next and I'm looking and I'm seeing dollar bills. Now, mind you, this is a toll booth. So there's people that have like passes where they can.
Too.
Yeah. And so I go to get out of the car. And my mom's like, loses her marbles. Obviously, I'm maybe 6 or 7 years old because I'm going to get out of the car because there's like $3 in the ground. Like I'm going to go grab that money. Like you got to be kidding me. It's free money. And so I literally was willing to put my life in danger to go pick up the $3. Needless to say, my mom did swoop me up and grab me and pull me back in the car and explain to me why going and grabbing $3 and putting your life on the line for that is not highly recommended, which over time made more sense, I guess.
So Shane, eventually you land at Sacramento State College, right? You study business. At the time you started college, did you have kind of like a strong pull for what you wanted to do after school? Or was this a time of, you know, kind of figuring things out?
Yeah, no, definitely a time to figure things out. It took me, when I ended up graduating from Sac State, it took me 10 years and it wasn't like each year. I mean, I went to a number of different colleges. I mean, I used to own a bar. I had, you know, quite a few businesses that I had. So for me, it was really, there was always stuff. I wanted to travel. And so I did a lot of traveling, went to Thailand. I went all over. I went to Australia. I mean, there was probably 10, 15 countries that I had been to because the idea for me was I wanted to kind of explore the world, right? And a lot of people do it where they start up, they start their career at 21, 22. And then, you know, now it's a little different because it's, you know, it's not quite you spend your same, you know, 30 years with the same company, but I don't want to be 60 years old and 70 years old and fragile and frail and be like, oh, I got money now. Now I can go travel. And it's like, I'm in my walker and going around. For me, I was like, you know, I kind of want to go experience the world. I didn't want it to be something that, you know, I don't want to wait, right? I figure I don't know when my time could be up and I don't want to be, you know, as much as it'd be great to, you know, die with tons of money, which, wait a second. No, you don't want to die with tons of money, right? The idea is I mean, you want to leave something for somebody, but the idea is you want to go out there and have some fun. So I was all about having fun and wanted to make sure I went and built out these experiences while I was young. And so I ended up graduating from Sac State And I already had, at that time, had owned a bar. At that point, I had a business that was a flourishing business. And I went in there just to go in and kind of finish up some of my studies. In fact, I'm even threatening to go back for my MBA right now, not because I need my MBA for what I do, but just to go and get my MBA so I can tell my son, hey, I got my MBA. So son, if you're hearing this, that's the reason I'm getting my MBA is because of you.
It's a powerful motivator.
That's it.
All right. So at this time, when you're graduating from school, you've had your own bar, right? Totally different from digital marketing. How do you eventually get into digital marketing? I know it's kind of a winding road, but if you had to like pull a thread from there, what led you to digital marketing?
Yeah, digital marketing, the reason I jumped into it was because I've always, for the most part, owned my own businesses. And so when I had a company called Hot Pad, it was a reusable heat pack that I would, there was a little trigger thing that we had a patent on. And so I was importing products from Korea that would come in, and then we had kiosks. So I had kiosks at malls and stuff like that. And one of the reasons I jumped into digital marketing is because I didn't have crazy budgets, right? I didn't have all kinds of money to spend. And so what I would do is I would go and say, okay, I want to go and find somebody at Get a Freelancer. It's Freelancer now, but it was called Get a Freelancer. I was one of the first people on there, and I would go and, you know, hire people from there on how to do a website. And so I was learning as I was going through this. I'm not a coder by any means, but I would go in and say, okay, if there's somebody that's good at SEO or somebody that's good at building a website or somebody's good at creating content. And I learned a lot through that whole process because I wanted to be a part of that, right? I want to either A, do it myself or really train or find somebody that can do it for me that I can learn enough information or enough knowledge to be dangerous. And so that's really kind of how it all came about. Was it was more bootstrapping all my businesses, and a lot of it had to do with online stuff. Same with the bar, where I had to create my website. I had to, you know, be able to create our own promotions and stuff like that. So I would hire freelancers and stuff that would come and help us put these things together. And then eventually that kind of, you know, it ended up coming in, making a decision to, hey, maybe now I can just stick with this digital marketing. Then we already know how to do this for my own businesses. I've had successes and failures as well, right? Which is also beneficial. And now I can help other businesses go and flourish and drive traffic and convert and do those kind of fun things.
That's really interesting that was kind of like what led to it for you, because that's similarly like my experience even getting interested in digital marketing was because I saw how other people were growing their businesses using, you know, like Facebook ads and then like Google CPC, like in the very early days, right? Those things were kind of still very like fruitful in terms of the returns you could get. And I kind of like taught myself as a way to like work on growing a couple of my own businesses, because I was like, oh, I don't want to like hire someone who's a specialist at Facebook ads, pay them on top of what I'm already going to be spending for the ads. And so that was kind of like the initial genesis of like throwing myself into learning as well. It's interesting to hear that your story is kind of similar.
Well, it is, man. I mean, I have to tell you, like the degree that I got at Sac State was a marketing degree, but I use, you know, hopefully my son isn't listening to this. I use like 1% of it, if that, right? 0.01. Because I mean, when I graduated in 2003, right? So I'm like 110 years old or something. So I'm a little older, but
the early digital marketing, at least.
Yeah, really. Yeah, we were using stones, people. This was way before the internet. This is with Jesus. We had stones and stuff that we would build. But no, it was the crazy part about it is that it's evolved, right? And in 2003, there was one entrepreneurship class that I took. And I'd already been an entrepreneur, successful and unsuccessful, right, with businesses. And so, you know, what I learned was really just grinding it out, right? Going online and learning stuff. And we didn't have Udemy. We didn't have a lot of these things where there's a lot of resources now. Now we, you know, yourself and myself, there's a lot of great content out there that people are writing about, that, you know, their successes and how they're doing things. And so there's so much information these days. It's awesome. You can go in and really, you know, go and want to learn PPC. You can go take a course on it. You can do this. You can read blog articles. You figure out who to follow. There's a lot of great information out there. For us starting off back in the day, there wasn't a lot of that, right? There wasn't a lot of people that were saying, hey, this is what we're doing to be successful. It was very much a, I got to keep this kind of secret. I'm making some money, but I don't want to tell anybody because then everybody's going to do what I'm doing. And now it's like, you got this, the whole world, man. The opportunity is like phenomenal. Like I tell my son that, like he's over and he's doing college right now. He's in his second year. And it's, for me, it's like, I'm like, you don't realize you making money is not a problem. Like there's plenty of ways to make money. You just have to figure out where you want to spend your time. And you have the world is your audience. You know, you don't need to go and get 10,000 people. You don't need to get all this. You really can have a smaller audience and have a niche audience, whatever that is. And as long as you specialize in something and then you get enough people, it really can be real fruitful. So it's a great time to be in marketing for sure.
this great advice to like across careers. Doesn't even have to be just marketing, right? Like as long as you find your thing that you're super interested in doing and investing the time into getting better at it, like there's going to be a market for it.
There always will be, man. There always, and you have to, you know, and I say this, you always kind of want to enjoy what you do. You know, that's the thing. It's very easy to say that because I enjoy what I do and I've built a great team and it wasn't an overnight type thing. But it's, you really do, like I wake up, the reason why I like digital marketing is because it's constantly changing. There's always something new to learn. And I enjoy that. I'm a student of the game. I'm always, you know, I read your blog. There's a lot of blogs that I read because I want to, you know, educate myself. I feel like I know 80%. I want to get to 90%. And then there's always something new that comes up. And I'm always, like I said, I like that continuous education side of things.
I love it. All right, so let's talk tactics now. I want to dig into, you know, maybe let's talk about in the early days and then today, how you go about landing clients for your consultancy. So I know by now, you know, talking about the today section, you get a lot of word of mouth and inbound leads, I'm assuming. Or maybe let's begin kind of in the earlier days. How were you generating leads? How were you getting people interested in wanting to work with you when you were just getting started before you kind of had a brand for yourself?
Yeah. So in the beginning, man, we did a lot of local stuff, right? So we would try to work with a lot of local companies that we could, you know, shake hands with and kiss babies and, you know, a little belly to belly action. And we got really good at that. And so like kind of putting processes together and we were like our own best case study, right? Hey, this is a site we've built. This is what we're doing. We're doing this stuff where we put in these certain words that on Google it pops up and you know, we didn't even know it was SEO at the time. So there was a lot of things that we've done once again to go to local businesses and say, hey, this is what we've done for our business and we can do this for yours. And so that's how I kind of started to build the name. I did a little bit of speaking stuff, but like local, like I don't know, what is it? BMI, I think BMI, is that what it is or something? Anyways, all these little networking event, breakfast and lunch. Yeah. And so I kind of cut my teeth there and would kind of show people what we were able, you know, the capabilities of what we're able to do. And now it's switched, and that was more Sacramento based. And now I don't even think I have a client in Sacramento, which is kind of crazy. Like most of my clients are all over the world, right? Mainly the United States, but I have like in Singapore and I have some international clients. And that's, you know, like you kind of touched on, a lot of the way, really the main way that I get all my leads is inbound marketing, right? We invested in content probably 7 years ago, maybe 8 years ago. In fact, I still have the original blog post that I wrote, which is an absolute piece of doo-doo. We'll be PC here. But it's terrible, bud. I mean, I actually show it to my students at UCLA. And the reason why I do that is because I say, look at this blog post. Like, oh my God, that's terrible and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, but the difference is I started, right? And that's exactly. where most people don't, right? So most people go, oh, I don't want this. And I don't want to do video because then I might look bad. I might look weird. Well, I can promise you your first video is going to look terrible. And your first blog post is going to be not awesome. And but the difference is you just have to do it, right? You got to start somewhere, right? And so we invested, like I said, in content marketing. And now we're at a point where you know, we get a great amount of traffic, the right type of traffic. We get a good amount of leads from my website on a daily basis. I mean, I actually just hired some people for like business development to start going after, being more proactive instead of waiting for the leads to come to us. So I've got a team that does it now, but I'll be honest, up until probably 4 or 5 months ago, I was the only salesperson and I have a 33 person team. So, you know, all because of inbound leads. Yeah, it is. And we put good processes in place, right? Back in the day, I was very much like, oh, I'll just put it all on my shoulders and, you know, I'm a grown man, I can take it on. And then I realized 20 hours a day wasn't a super healthy schedule from what I can imagine, right? I was like 30 pounds heavier and wasn't working out and eating cupcakes. Not really. Well, I probably was eating cupcakes. They were good. But, you know, the idea was I wasn't working out. Didn't really have that balance. And now I've built a system where I'm with my team and everything. I've got a phenomenal team. We've hired a lot of people to get the core team that we have, but they're awesome. We've got great content writers. They're great strategists. Great about SEO. We don't do tons of websites anymore just because it's a lot of work. But we're definitely heavy in the influencer space. I've been doing a lot of education there on that side of things. And then we drive a lot of content. We write a lot of content for a lot of big websites to help them drive the traffic and convert that traffic.
So let's talk about that inbound component, right? So today, you know, fast forwarding to today, so much of your leads come in from inbound. I know you mentioned organic search as one thing, right? So someone who's maybe searching for digital marketing consultant or something along those lines, you guys, I'm assuming, rank for that.
It's funny. So if you look up digital marketing consultant, I'm number one or number two. So I don't know if you look that up or if that was
that's
just
pretty powerful.
That's what happens, man. When those SEO minds, when sometimes when people focus in on a keyword, and I was, in my head, I was like, I hope that Ryan says digital marketing consultant so I can say I'm number one.
I did my homework.
That's it, bud. That's it. That's all we can ask. Yeah, we have. I mean, there's probably...
What goes into ranking for that? That's the next question that comes to mind for me.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to ranking for those types of keywords, I mean, it really comes down to understanding your audience. Like, okay, who's going to be a perfect client for me, right? So obviously, digital marketing consultant, anybody that's looking for a consultant that does digital marketing online, I want to be number one for that, right? Because I'm saying, hey, my clients are people that are A, want to jump in the digital space or in the digital space, have sales go in and say, hey, we want to 10 times this. We want to tenfold whatever we've got going on. So, you know, the idea is I think of, okay, what are the keywords that my clients would potentially look up? And it's always difficult because you always in your mind, you think you know what your clients are looking up, right? And so you have these keywords and you write them all down. You're like, oh, this is great. And you go and look them up in, you know, whatever, SEMrush or Ahrefs or whatever. And you look it up and there's like no searches. And it's like, why try to index for something that you think your clients are looking up when there's no search volume, right? What's the point of that? So we go and obviously we're very strategic about like, hey, here goes the keywords and what are other, you know, relevant keywords that are similar to that, like these bunches of keywords or cluster of keywords. And then we go and we put content together that will optimize for those types of keywords, right? And so we have four or five articles that will go after these 10 keywords. And then the idea is we want to pull in that traffic. And it can be, you know, 500 people a month. It can be 50,000 people a month. Mm-hmm. The idea being is that it's the right type of traffic for us. And you know, this is an evolving machine. It says in the beginning, I put out content just to put out content. There was no keywords. I didn't think about the title. The thought process was like, just put something out there. And if you look at my articles, you know, I just put something out there. That was about it. You know, it might've been a little plagiarism involved there potentially too in the beginning, but now obviously we're not doing that, but it's, you know, it's about that original content. And once again, you have to produce content with a purpose, right? If you're not producing it for a purpose, if you're just putting it out there, if you're beginning, that's okay. At least you're putting something out there, but you have to get a strategy around it and saying, okay, what is the reason for us putting out this content, right? Is it from an SEO perspective? Is it because we understand the pain point of our clients and this is a like how-to question or what if this happens or something like that? You just have to produce it with a purpose and understand of like reverse engineer the content and figure out like with this, the reason I'm going after this is because of this. This is our goal because our clients are looking for this or this is their pain point.
Especially with something that's designed to generate leads for like a service offering or even a product, really. But I've done something similar with when you Google search content marketing consultant, I typically come up number one. Sometimes there's fluctuations, but that funnel for me has driven well over six figures in clients that have just come right straight to knocking my door. And I know for me, there's a lot that has gone into getting that page to rank aside from just like the on-page stuff of getting the keywords right and matching search intent. Like, you know, I go out and do guest posts and like try and build backlinks through things like that. What have you found aside from the on-page stuff has had like the strongest impact in being able to rank content well?
Yeah. I mean, obviously besides the on-page stuff for us, it's really been the guest blog posts that I do. I mean, I write for 100 plus websites, right? So we're talking SEMrush, Search Engine Journal, to HuffPost, to Inc. So I have a lot of different websites that I write for. Yeah, it is. It's a lot. And we've built this great machine of content, of producing this content. So a lot of people will see me writing for here, writing for there. And then they'll say, hey, this is the type of person that I want for SEO or for, you know, influencer marketing or something like that, whatever category they're looking for. So most of the time I get people that will contact me because once again, they see me in a lot of different places. And that's really how we've gone up in the rankings. I'll tell you, man, the last year and a half was when we really started to look at my website from an SEO perspective. Before, we were kind of doing some stuff there and my traffic's gone through the roof. I mean, I'm in the sense of where we started, which was minimal traffic.
Once you start caring about it.
Yeah, once you really kind of put it on the radar. We were doing it for everybody else client-wise. And I wasn't really doing it. It was, you know, it's kind of like the chef that comes home and eats top ramen, right? Like I'm like cooking top ramen with, you know, like some spam in it or something like that. And so, you know, but now I was like, okay, I got to really reevaluate this. I really want to start driving those leads and, you know, the guest blog posts and us getting mentioned, you know, because you get that traction too once you start getting mentioned more and more and more. And then people are using your case studies and they're doing your white papers and you're producing infographics, which we've seen some good results from where people backlink to the infographics. It really is just, it comes down to the same thing. Like anytime Google comes out with an update, everybody, you know, like grits their teeth and like, oh God, what's going to happen? For me, I'm not worried about it because what we do is all white hat, right? And we do very ethical stuff. So, you know, I've never had, honestly, I've never any of the penalties that have come through. I don't build sites to to get rid of them in 6 months, right? Yeah. For me, there's intent behind it of like, hey, I want to build this as a profit generator for me. And so we do things very white hat. And so, you know, it's great when there's these updates because everybody else cringes. And for us, our site always goes up. And so we're very, very lucky in that sense.
Yeah, that's smart. I mean, building a site that's authentic in terms of everything you're doing and offering and telling people, that's honestly, that's the only way to go if you want to build something that's a long-term business. Now, you mentioned, I want to touch on this because you mentioned Inc., Forbes, Entrepreneur, Search Engine Journal, all these sites you write for. And I know that the list goes on and on and on, very long list. And I want to pick out maybe one of these, say Inc. or Forbes. Now, I know that this is unique for everyone who writes for these sites, but you know, how did you go about landing one of your columns in particular, whichever one comes to mind?
Yeah, so the issue is it's a lot more difficult now, I would say, right? And so if people want to get on Inc. or Forbes, they're very particular on who they pick. I got on a number of years ago. What I did is it's all foundational. So we actually have a program, what's called our thought leadership program. So if anybody's like a, you know, owner of a SaaS company that's successful or something like that, they want to get to where they're writing for those companies, we have a program that we've put together for that, right? Because we've obviously done it ourselves and helped other clients do it. But if you want to do it yourself, it's all foundational. So you start off writing for these sites that are, you know, 20, 30, 40 domain authority, and say, hey, you know, I have this, these are the kind of content I write. I write blah, 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 all original content. You're pitching something and then you write for those sites and then you can tell these sites, you write for these sites and then you write for these sites to these sites. I mean, it's all foundational. It is difficult to get on the Inks and the Forbes of the world, right? It's not an easy process. And once again, we have a lot of good relationships with them. So, you know, if we're vouching for somebody and saying, hey, this is somebody that we've worked with in the past, this is the kind of content they produce, 99% of the time, we're probably producing the content for that individual, right? From like a ghostwriting perspective. Right. So we know what kind of content. Yeah. So we know them pretty well, right? So we know what kind of quality that the editors are going to want as well. But the thing is it is difficult if you go and find an editor on Forbes or Inc. to get just an approval out of the blue. It takes almost a miracle, right? You might need like a Bible or something and like pray every day. And then maybe that your odds will become, you know, better. I don't know, but it's
something very noteworthy that you've done and maybe other people have written about it.
That's exactly. You just have to have some traction, right? People have to look at this and say, oh, okay, John Smith has done this, 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 and this, right? And there has to be something where they go, well, there's a reason why we would want you to write for Inc. or Forbes, right? I think another side of it too, and not to devalue Inc. or Forbes, but those are nice to say that you write for them. But if you're really looking to put phenomenal content out, it's probably not going to be on Forbes. And what I mean by that is Forbes is like 800 words, right? There's nothing that you can, and it's a little clickbaity, right? I mean, they're like the three things that Elon Musk did to make $1 billion. And they're like, focus and breathe and meditate or something. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's not what he did to make billions, right? I don't know if those are the, so you got to think about that as well. Like I'll have clients say, oh, I want to be a thought leader and I want to be on Forbes. And I say, listen, let's think about where your clientele is at. And maybe they are on Forbes, but Forbes is very short form, like content, right? It's not this long form. It's not super educational. It's very kind of get you in and kind of get you on the website and they'll get you with some other, you know, headlines and stuff like that. So I just tell people like it really comes down to your goal. Now, if you want to say you were mentioned on Forbes, I get it, right? We want to say that. So let's get you mentioned on Forbes and then you can take that off your list of, you know, ego things that you need in life. And there we go. Now we can talk about getting you on websites that are really going to drive the right type of traffic though.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's smart context. Know your goals before you even go down that path.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that really is anything you do in life. Anything you do, influencer marketing, know what your goals are. You want to do SEO, know what your goals are, because then you want to build it backwards. Because, you know, if you want to be on Forbes, I get why that is, because you want to say you write for Forbes. But I'll tell you, Forbes probably isn't the number one driver of my leads, I would say. It doesn't hurt validity-wise, right? But it's not the one that I'm like, oh my God, if I look at my analytics and I go, man, Forbes is what's crushing it for me, getting tons of leads or at least driving tons of traffic. It's just not, but it is nice to say that I write for Forbes, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shout out to Forbes if you hear this. I still love you guys.
All right, Shay. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. The last question that I had for you, I do want to touch on influencer marketing briefly. Because I know this is such a central area of focus for you right now. So, you know, most of the people listening today are at least somewhat familiar with what influencer marketing is, right? But, you know, how does it typically look when you're hired as a consultant? Like, what are you focusing on? What do clients care about? What should they care about? And, you know, where should your time be going to make an actual good influencer marketing campaign?
Yeah. So right now with the influencer things, we've been doing it for maybe 6 or 7 years now. Really where I'm spending my time, like the class I teach at UCLA is personal branding and how to be an influencer. And then the second part of it is how brands can work with influencers. So the thing is, this is I'm spending a lot of time on education, because the issue with influencer marketing is there's a brand and influencers that don't know how to put together the campaigns, and they go and try to put together the campaigns and then they're unsuccessful, right? So, I mean, it's no different than SEO or PPC. If you have somebody that doesn't know PPC and then somebody that kind of knows ads, but they don't really know what they're doing sometimes, there's not a good connection. So what we're doing, I've been doing workshops. I did one in San Francisco. We had Amazon was there and purple.com, and there were some other big companies that were there. And what we're doing is training and showing you these companies and saying, listen, let me show you how to do this the right way. And the training I did in San Francisco was an 8-hour training. And we had a few other, like a few sponsors and stuff that came through as well. And the content, you know, for me, I'm thinking, God, this content is great. But I'm like, let's see how it resonates with the people. The guy from Amazon came and was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I just did a thing at MDMC, which was here in the Midwest. They had, that's the largest conference or marketing conference that they have. And I was just there in St. Louis last week. And, you know, they, once again, talking about influencer marketing, I have Anheuser-Busch that was raising their hand, asking all kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. So these huge brands that are doing influencer marketing, and a lot of the times they don't know what they're doing, right? Because they think they do, like, hey, go grab an influencer as a huge following and we'll give them some pictures and they'll do this and hopefully it'll turn out great. There's a lot more to it, right? There's a lot more to it when it comes to the briefs and how to negotiate and, you know, and the types of content and what you want to put in your contracts. So we're working on the education side. For me, that's a big piece, because you're going to have your chances of having a successful campaign if you have an influencer that knows what they're doing and a brand that knows what they're doing, and then merging those. That's where my consulting comes in, and where we do personal workshops for big brands and even medium-sized brands. And, you know, we have a lot of different ways to work with people, but influencer marketing, there's just, if it's done correctly, like anything in marketing, right, it can have phenomenal, phenomenal results. But the idea of it is if you have the budget with anything, even with SEO, make sure you hire somebody to help you go through that process, especially if you have a big budget and you're spending a lot of money. Because, you know, I have Anheuser-Busch that their budgets are millions and millions of dollars, and they can bring me in for pennies on the dollar compared to their, you know, $50 million that they spend and whatever, for me to help educate them and educate the whole staff. And listen, this is how you guys do things, and this is how you negotiate, and this is what you need to look for, and this is why you shouldn't work with this influencer. Look at the fake engagement here. It's certain things like that that you can, you know, you can save yourself $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 by not working, by, you know, working with the right people and understanding what to look for. So that's, for me, that's a big, big thing here in 2019 and moving forward.
Is influencer marketing an applicable strategy for people that aren't the big brands?
I think it absolutely is, man. It really is. It really comes down to like what your budget is. And if you don't have a big budget, that's okay too. What we have to look at is the value, right? So you have to have value add. So what I mean by that is, let's say you're a, you know, give you an example, you're a yoga company. And so you're a yoga company, you have a patent, you're bringing these new mats out, you don't have a, you know, $50,000 budget. But what you do have is you can go and reach out to, you know, a yoga instructor and talk to them about, hey, we want to take, you know, whatever content you produce, we want to put it on our flyers, we want to do a feature of have you on my website, we want to, you know, also have a videographer that's going to come out and they can do the video content for you, so it's not costing you as much. We'll give you free product each month. Like, figure out what that value trade is, right? Because the idea is if you see an influencer and you want to work with that influencer and they do phenomenal content, well, most likely they have a production team, right? They have a video person, they have a photographer, and that's a cost, right, for them. If they're doing this full time, so you can't expect for me to give them a free $15 yoga mat and for them to lose their mind and go spend one whole day and spend, you know, $3,000 to, you know, promote this $10 yoga mat or $15 yoga mat. So you have to figure out how to make it a win-win. I think that's a big problem. And the other thing is every influencer is different. So everybody wants to go, how do I negotiate with an influencer? Well, you can't put every influencer into one category and you say, this is how you negotiate with every influencer, because everything's negotiable. The idea of it is you go in and say, hey, this is how we work with other influencers in the past. We have a budget. We would love to jump on a call with you and see what kind of content you think we would produce with this type of campaign. Be honest with them, but be straightforward, because you have to realize influencers get pitched 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 times a week. And so you have to figure out, what if you have to send 50 emails back and forth to be able to figure something out, it's a nightmare for the influencer. Tell them what you're looking for. Be very precise in what you're looking for, what you're willing to offer, and then also let them know, hey, we're willing. We do have you know, money on the table. We have compensation. We can trade product. There's a number of different ways we can do this, but we would want to know maybe if you want to jump on a 5-minute call and be able to kind of talk this thing out a little bit, see if we're a good fit.
I love that. All right, Shane. Well, I'm going to let you go. We could do a round two on this, talk specifically about influencer marketing. So we're going to have to do that one day.
I'm in, bud. I'm all in.
For today, can you tell everyone listening, watching, where they can go to learn more about you and everything you're up to?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can just go to ShaneBarker.com. That's ShaneBarker.com. And then my email, this is my personal email, Shane@ShaneBarker.com. You guys can reach out anytime.
Beautiful. All right, Shane, thanks for joining us.
All right, Ryan. Thank you so much, man.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.